Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you, as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good, and it looks like more Democrats are getting nervous, particularly, I'm sure it's just coincidental, if their name is on the ballot in 2014. Al Franken of Minnesota, who until recently, and perhaps even still today, is not considered to be in much danger for a second term, unfortunately, even he now is saying that if healthcare.gov is not up and running as promised, to the extent promised by the end of this month, then he would be open to delaying the individual mandate. He, of course, still says he hopes that's not necessary, so it's not like he still doesn't believe in Obamacare. This is more about the website for him, but still, it's another voice, Jim, that suggests that Democrats are getting nervous about this, and they're not willing to sit and wait for the website to magically fix itself much longer.
Franken is kind of a useful test case here. He was among those who all of a sudden kind of decided, oh, wait, I don't like the medical device manufacturer tax. Oh, wait a minute, doesn't Minnesota have a whole bunch of medical device manufacturers? And the answer is yes, yes, they do, which explains. So he's already got one reason that Obamacare might be a loser in his home state, despite the fact that Minnesota is traditionally seen as a blue and fairly heavily Democratic state. But then you throw this on there, and you're right. I think what's indicating here is that Franken, who had not been seen as attracting a top-tier challenger, and Republicans had not really had much success in statewide races since probably Norm Coleman back in 2002 or so. But now you've got a circumstance in which there could very well be an issue to run against on Al Franken. And, you know, your average Republican up in Minnesota could say, look, this is a law that is hurting our state. It's hurting businesses within our state who can't hire, and it's hurting everybody else through a dysfunctional website that they can't use to purchase insurance. And, oh, by the way, they're losing their insurance. And, oh, by the way, our premiums are not going down by $2,500 like the president promised, and all these other, you know, unkept promises and probably never meant to be kept promises involved in this. So it's a useful indicator. It's not just the red states that are objecting to Obamacare and it's creating a political liability for Democrats. Knocking off Franken will still be a tall order, but look, this administration is, you know, the Obama administration's response to all these things is full speed ahead. They think that we can just, you know, bulldoze through all this, and eventually they're going to fix the website by the end of November. We swear. And it's going to be all fixed and all better. I think they're going to have a rude awakening in the next couple of months, and it's not going to get better, and Americans aren't going to grow to love it. That's what they've been hoping for 3 years. And it's folks like Al Franken who will be bearing the brunt of the damage for the Democratic Party.
And keep in mind, Minnesota, Al Franken was the 60th vote for this bill, right, just like every other Democrat who's up for re-election in 2014. So I don't know if that'll end up hurting him against a generic Republican. And it turns out, Jim, I don't know if he's interested in it, but Minnesota just happens to have a successful statewide generic Republican. His name is Tim Pawlenty. So
yes, yes. He's been working for a couple interest groups since and he has presidential campaign. But yeah, you know, I haven't heard much from Tim. Maybe if he wants to get back into politics, this would be a good opportunity for him there.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll need to see the Franken numbers dip quite a bit more before he entertains that thought. But on to martini number two now, Jim. And our college football viewing was rudely interrupted on Saturday evening with an announcement from President Obama that a phenomenal interim deal has just been signed in Geneva in the wee hours of the morning. And I'm sure all Americans are confident that if John F. Kerry is at the helm of multilateral talks to allow the Iranians to have a little more breathing room on economic sanctions in exchange for promises that they won't develop nuclear weapons, well, it sounds like a lot of Americans aren't too confident of that. In fact, both Republicans and Democrats are very skeptical of the deal. Benjamin Netanyahu, perhaps the strongest language, as you might expect, saying that this is a historic disaster. Here's the president in a couple of different clips from his brief speech on Saturday night, kind of showing what I think a lot of conservatives would suggest is his naivete on this issue.
Today, that diplomacy opened up a new path toward a world that is more secure, a future in which we can verify that Iran's nuclear program is peaceful and that it cannot build a nuclear weapon. On our side, the United States and our friends and allies have agreed to provide Iran with modest relief while continuing to apply our toughest sanctions. We will refrain from imposing new sanctions, and we will allow the Iranian government access to a portion of the revenue that they have been denied through sanctions. But the broader architecture of sanctions will remain in place, and we will continue to enforce them vigorously. And if Iran does not fully meet its commitments during the six-month phase, We will turn off the relief and ratchet up the pressure.
Jim, I've heard from virtually everyone who's reacted to this that if you ease up on the sanctions, getting them back, if Iran is found to be non-compliant, is virtually impossible given the other members on the Security Council. And it's, once again, in the minds of many conservatives, an example of Obama believing that his sheer personality or force of will or something can get the world's worst actors to actually honor their promises.
I mean, as soon as this deal got announced, I actually, you know, first heard about it Sunday morning. Obviously, look, being skeptics of the good word of, you know, the Tehranian regime, we go into this a wee bit skeptical, but I was like, all right, let me read into it. Let me see if they're, you know, I'm being my usual knee-jerk, reflexive, neocon warmonger self. And so you read through it, but it really does look like we're asking them to pause, right? To, you know, not to dismantle, because, this, you know, if you dismantle the equipment they use to enrich uranium and do all these things to facilitate the process of building a nuclear bomb, well, then they're really in trouble because they have to start over all over again. If you just say stop doing that, they can, you know, flick the switch and turn it back on whenever they want. Then, as you pointed out, you know, Obama's like, well, we can always restart sanctions. But if there's anything we've learned from dealing with hostile states is that there's always going to be some voices saying, well, wait a minute, let's not be too hasty. There's this tiny glimmer sign of advanced cooperation. So in order to we don't want to blow out that flame of hope. So we have to give them a little more time, and let's make them one more concession, and that'll make them more cooperative. And the history of Iran and the history of a lot of hostile states is that they're generally concessions in the name of greater cooperation tends to look an awful lot like appeasement. I'm really kind of struck by anybody who would say, oh, we can trust the Iranians. And the emphasis is, well, look, we can verify this. We're going to send in the international inspectors, and they're going to look through, and they're going to make sure, which is all great as long as they don't have secret facilities. And unfortunately, as we've now know, you know, several times in the past couple of decades, we keep finding secret facilities that the Iranians have, thanks to our intelligence network. So we're really betting a lot on our intelligence network's ability to verify what the Iranians are doing, and of course whether the international community, you know, is capable of catching them in the act of doing such things. But I think probably the best example of why this is utterly, totally doomed to result in a you know, another big failure is Fars News, the Iranian state-sponsored news outlet, proclaimed that the accord, quote, includes recognition of Tehran's right of uranium enrichment, and that the right of enrichment has been recognized in two places of the document. So as far as they're concerned, this is a giant concession from us saying, Iran, it is okay to enrich uranium, just don't use it for a bomb. Now, of course, Secretary of State John Kerry is on, you know, the Sunday shows this week, and he says, there is no right to enrich. We do not recognize a right to enrich. Well, they can't both be right. It can't be totally different in the Farsi version of the document and the English version of the document. What we expect here is probably not all that different from what we saw with Assad, is that you have an agreement and then they start changing the terms or they start not quite honoring their words. Very rarely a blatant and flagrant disagreement, but they start, you know, cutting corners and shaving the details and making, you know, each time saying, well, do you really want to throw out the treaty? Do you really want to go to war over this? And the answer is that very rarely does the United States want to go to war with Iran or want to go to war with Syria or any of these other states. So they basically say, well, all right, we'll allow that little part of not living up to the treaty. And all of a sudden, the treaty becomes not worth the paper it's written on. In fact, it's more damaging because it lulls you into a false sense of security when your opponent is really continuing to go forward towards their goals as much as they ever did, except now they're getting credit from the international community. And in this case, we actually had a good, you know, amount of pressure on the Iranian regime because of the sanctions. Now that has been let up. My guess is 6 months down the road, there'll be some a big blurry shade of gray of whether or not Iran is honoring the sanctions. But getting the UN to reinstate them will be a pain in the neck. And we are not exactly awash in diplomatic capital now, are we, Greg?
Well, we know the mullahs can't be trusted. The question now is, when the American people and members of Congress look at this, given the credibility hit the president's taken in the last couple of months especially, but throughout the last year certainly, how much is his credibility going to be not only on the line here, but to what extent can we believe him at this point?
How'd you like to be President Obama? Let's say it's 6 months down the road and we want to reimpose sanctions. How'd you like to be Barack Obama calling up, say, Angela Merkel and asking for help? You know, Angela, I was listening to your cell phone earlier, and I know you're skeptical of this, but I really want to tell you, I really do need your help, and I need you to forget all those that bad blood we have over me spying on you I mean, my guess is that 6 months from now, Iran is not keeping their word, and we don't get the sanctions back. Worst of both worlds. And the characterization is that this is, you know, this is not a roadblock to the Iranian nuclear bomb. This is, if anything, at most a speed bump.
On to the crazy martini now, and back to the president's credibility. More bad polling news for the most part here, with the president out of a new CNN survey that shows that only 40% of Americans think that President Obama is a good manager of government. 53% of Americans now believe that he is not honest and trustworthy. 56% say he is not a person they admire. An equal number say he does not agree with them on important issues. 56% say he does not inspire confidence. 53% don't view him as a strong and decisive leader. All those figures are all-time records for Obama in CNN polling in terms of negatives. But 7 in 10 say he's likable. 70%, Jim, despite the fact that strong majorities don't trust him, don't think he's doing a good job, don't think he's well-suited for the job, but we like him.
Doggone it. He's not good enough. He's not smart enough. But doggone it, people do still like him. I look at that figure, I can almost hear some listeners saying, well, that's because people are afraid that if they say they don't like him, they'll be called racist. Sort of the Bradley effect in Obama's polling. And I'm not really convinced of that as a serious factor in polling anymore, particularly because if you're really terrified that the pollster is going to call you racist or somebody who might be listening in the room is going to call you racist for not approving of Obama, well, then it's not likely that you'd say that you don't admire him, you don't agree with him, you don't have confidence in him, you don't think he's a strong and decisive leader, all these other things. So I think the best explanation for this is that a certain number of the respondents just got tired of saying no. As in, you know, do you think he's honest and trustworthy? No. Do you think he's a person you admire? No. Do you agree with him on important issues? No. Do you like him? Sure. Or that there's a certain element of sympathy for Obama in that they feel like he's in over his head and they feel bad for him. Now, he spent a lot of time and money telling us he was ready to do this job and he could do a great job in this job and we needed him and he was the embodiment of hope and change. But I could understand certain Americans who, by the way, whatever their party, I mean, generally they want the president to not fall flat on his face, because if he's falling flat on his face, it usually means bad news for the country as a whole. So they want him to do okay. They want him to succeed, even if they disagree with certain part, you know, his agenda. And to see him just kind of flailing as he is right now, I think they're very unnerved by this. But to make the leap to I don't like him anymore is kind of an interesting leap that might be the last domino to fall. Or, like I said, maybe they're just tired of listing off his negative faults and they want to find something they could like about him. I think what I'd like to see is the voters are basically saying to him, as he said to Hillary Clinton, you're likable enough, Barack.
Well, we'll see what happens when their premiums go up. So
yeah,
we'll find out in a few months, I guess. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to tomorrow, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.